A recovering addict, my name is Kim. It's good to be in a Narcotics Anonymous meeting. It's especially good to be in a Narcotics Anonymous Capital Area 11 convention. That 10:30 in the morning meeting. You know, you know how when you get asked to share, it's like a ritual. I got a ritual, something that I do. You know, I pray and I meditate and I ask God, because I truly, it's not about being at the podium and being big-headed. It's not about popularity in Narcotics Anonymous. There ain't no first and second class memberships, because some people get asked to share at conventions and some people don't. You know what I mean? There is only one membership in the Narcotics Anonymous, and that's the desire to stop using drugs. And if you got a desire to stop using drugs, you too might stand up at the podium one day. But I don't even like doing this no more. Honestly, to be honest with you, I just want to go somewhere like and really want to ride off into the sunset. Like, I got here May 16th, 1993. I had not found a reason to go back to drugs. You know, I came into the program. It's probably not coincidental I'm doing the first step, right? And I surrendered. I didn't surrender right away, but I knew I was done with that life. I sat at the end of the road, and I sat there, and I wanted a new way to live, right? I found my way back to Narcotics Anonymous, and thank God. You know, but now I've been here by the grace of God, like I said, and I always share my clean time, and it ain't to boast and brag, right? It's me, I share, and it ain't even for the newcomer. I share my clean time because I'm proud of my clean time. It take work to get a day clean. It take a whole lot of courage not to pick up a drug a day at a time. A whole lot of determination and perseverance not to pick that shit up. You understand what I'm saying? So when I share my clean time, I got in touch with why I share it. It's because I'm proud of my clean time. I've been here consistently, uninterrupted clean time, for God willing, May 16th, and I ain't kind of trying to cop short, but 14 years, right? But we in a first step meeting, and I believe in, just staying where you're supposed to stay at with it, right? And it talked about, you know, trying to carry a clear message, because, like, that's my hope. It ain't about the hoopla, I swear. In the beginning, it was. I needed it. Me and Umar was just talking about an early recovery. I used to have carloads of people following me to go share. And I needed all of that support. Then I started getting a closer walk with God. And when you get a closer walk with God, I'm not saying that you don't need people because he works through people, but I'm talking about just me and him, we roll out, right? But it's funny because, you know, some members from my home group is in here. Trent Group of NA, I love y'all. You know, and, like, I ain't invite them. If I invited, I used to invite people to my commitments. I'm sharing, I'm doing a first step, come on, 10:30 meeting, and I would have filled this whole room up with my home group members, my network, the women I sponsor, people from other areas. The room would have been filled up with all my people, and my head would have been this damn ego trip. I ain't ego tripping. I asked God. I said, please help me to stay in my place. For real. Please help me to stay in a humble state. Please help me to remember when I go to a Narcotics Anonymous meeting, I'm asked to share, that I'm serving you. Please help me to remember that I'm just a vessel and an instrument to serve you. It's not about me. I mean, some girl was at another convention. She was talking about the prestige that comes with speaking at conventions and stuff like that, right? I don't even want to be there. I want to be somewhere else. I want to be that little dot. You understand what I'm saying? I don't want to be, I can go on and on about that, but I really need to get that out the way. So I could really, really ask God to please just use me to carry a clear, undiluted, life-saving message on the first step. And I need to talk about, the road I traveled prior to getting to a first step. Because, like, I didn't come in here, bling-blinging. I didn't come in here smelling good. I didn't come in here looking good. I didn't come in here sounding good. I came in here beat down. And I thank God for the gift of desperation. I thank God today. I'm talking about this addict. I couldn't have came. I did come. I came to Narcotics Anonymous in 87 because I couldn't stop spending my paycheck every Thursday. I was working in this law firm, and, I started that office on some kind of work-study program, and after my work-study program, they kept me there. I had that job for about 7 years, and every Thursday, I couldn't stop spending my paycheck. I remember in the beginning when I had the boyfriend that was the drug dealer, and he wasn't my boyfriend because he was a drug dealer. He was an ex-boyfriend that introduced me to crack cocaine, right? And he fed it to me, right? I didn't know nothing about finding ways and means to get more. I didn't know nothing about the ugly side of addiction. I ain't know nothing about that. All I knew was when I wanted to hit, it was right here. I'm talking about in the beginning when we was smoking 8 balls and we was buying half ounces. And at the end, we was trying to put $2 together to get a damn $5 dip. You understand what I'm saying? But I remember that, right? And, you know, so I was getting my paycheck every Thursday. But this was after I kicked the guy out. Like, you disrespecting my mom's house. You selling drugs out the attic, and you got people knocking on. Why do these people? I want to know. I did. I'm talking about being young until I learned. Being young in addiction. And I didn't know why the people was knocking on my mother's door at 2 o'clock in the morning to buy this little white rock. What? Why the fuck ain't they home sleep? What is wrong with them people? What is wrong with the people you dealing with? They can't knock on my mother's door, so he was disrespecting my mother's house. So I put him out, right? I didn't know when I put him out the drug was going to go with him. And I didn't know by that time, you know, I was caught up. I had the monkey was on my back, for real, for real. I put him out, and I can remember spending my first paycheck and not having no money left and still wanting to get high. And I remembered what I had to do to get one more. And I remember, like, saying I would never do it. You understand what I'm saying? So, I managed to make it here, right? And like, again, I talk about thanking God for the gift of desperation. It's not necessary that we dwell excessively on war stories, and I need to get the one, because sometimes I don't know how to manage the time when I stand up here. But newcomers need to hear something they can identify with. Some of us have the ability, and some of us is real fucking articulate when it comes to carrying an archivist's message. But it's about the newcomer. The newcomer is the most important person. We're trying to pull them in. We're trying to bring them in. So we need to say something that they can identify with. Like, I do this. This is how I'm living now, but this is how I used to live. This is how it was before it got like it is now. Before I got some money and got some choices and got a job and, you know, got the love and respect back of my family members, I used to be a skeezer selling pussy for $4. You understand what I'm saying? And I can't forget that. I need to stand up here and I need to say that for me. That is not for you. That is for me. That's how I live. That's what active addiction reduced me to. You understand what I'm saying? So I sat on that park bench in that park. I'm going to talk, you know, I'm move it up into the last run, right? My string is hanging. I'm sorry. I remember getting a welfare check and saying that I want to stop. I did. Because I remembered what life was like before the addiction had progressed. I remember I was a little bit functional, not functional using drugs, but I was able to get up and go to a job. I was able to put a little bit of money in the bank. You know, I was able to love and care for my children. I was able to go to the laundromat once a week. And what happened at the end was I realized you ain't none of that no more. You know what I mean? I remember, you know, being in high school and being liked, and I remembered all the good stuff about life. I sat on that bench and I was getting that welfare check, and I was at the crack house, and they was like, "Boo boo, you gotta go. Ain't no more stuff, and you ain't got no money, and ain't no more drink. We getting ready to leave." I was talking about being drunk, right? Pissy drunk. I had urinated on myself. I couldn't get enough crack that day. Really. So I drank. I was drinking and I got pissy drunk. And I remember them saying, "Boo, you got to leave." And I remember, you know, just staggering down the street and trying to just get to the next spot where I could rest at so I could think about how I'm going to find some ways and means to get more. And I sat down on that bench and I'm just going to give y'all a picture. It's Sunday afternoon, broad daylight. The little city park right on the corner, Hamilton and Chestnut, coincidentally, right? The little city park over there. They had a hot dog vendor over here was selling hot dogs. They had a baseball game going over here. They had, you know, some kids playing over here. And then it was me sitting on the bench. I started sitting. Then I took a little rest and I laid down and, you know, and that was my end. I couldn't stop smoking crack. I couldn't stop spending my wealth. I went from working, I told you I worked in the beginning, I'm talking about the progression of disease, to at the end, I was unemployable. You know, I didn't want to go to nobody's job. I started learning what the people in the streets was learning. Why you want to go to work? He get paid on Thursday. Let him go work all week and stay up all night, and you get just be riding on his check when he get his check, right? So at the end, you know, I just was a mess. I'm talking about 30 years old, 110 pounds, soaking wet. I had a fetus in my belly at the time, and I sat on that park bench, and I had spent that welfare check month after month and said I wasn't going to do it no more. When next month come, I always had a good intention list. When next month come, I'm going to pay my mother back the money that I owe her. I'm going to make a contribution in this household that I'm living in and eating up the goddamn food when everybody go to sleep. I had all these good intentions. But when I got the check, none of that happened. But I did that consistently for like, and after that 7 months, I was just done with me, right? I was done. You know, I'm not saying I surrendered right away. We had a first step meeting, right? First, that talks about being powerless over our addiction, that our lives have become unmanageable. When I got here, like, I wasn't even trying to get with that old powerless shit. Because I came from, never let them see you sweat. Don't shed a fucking tear. You strong. You understand what I'm saying? Suck it up. You know what I mean? I come from a household where daddy left early. Somebody had to be the strong one. My mother's real meek. I love my mom. Just for this day, I love my mother. But her personality is real passive and real meek. Everybody in the family except me. I'm the assertive, aggressive, passive, aggressive one, right? So my father left. Somebody had to take care of the family, right? So like I stepped up and I started protecting my family. And so when I got here, they talking about, I ain't powerless over shit, right? I could handle things. I'm in control. You know what I mean? So it was contrary to everything that I had learned prior to getting here. It's a powerless hit in the fat book, right? And I'm gonna read it because I believe in the literature. Like I could get up here and share a whole bunch of bullshit. You understand what I'm saying? It's some me and some people I roll with, right? If it ain't in black and white, don't even come over here. For real, for real. If it ain't in our literature, don't even come over here with your theories and your opinions. We can't help people off of theories and opinions. Okay, powerlessness. As addicts, we react to the word powerlessness in a variety of ways. Some of us recognize that a more accurate description of our situation simply could not exist and admit our powerlessness with a sense of relief. It says that we are powerless, you know, because my own definition of powerless is, it's just that, I can't do it. I can't, for real. Everything that I tried didn't work, so I can't control. I can't control my getting high. I can't control nothing. The definition in here says, we are powerless when the driving force in our life is beyond our control. Our addiction certainly qualifies as such an uncontrollable driving force. We cannot moderate or control our drug use or other compulsive behaviors, even when they are causing us to lose the things that matter to us the most. I told y'all I couldn't stop, right? I remember the days where I had a dilemma. You know, I'm talking about after being on 4 or 5 day run, and that 5th day come, and you really know your body need food and water. You really know your body need rest. But you know the drug is saying, come here, come get me. The drug is saying, keep moving. The drug is saying, don't sit down. But you know, in your right mind, you ain't in your right mind when you're smoking, but every now and then you get a moment of sanity, right? In your right mind, I need to take this $5 and go buy some food. But I buy crack instead. I'm talking about being powerless. I remember just, you know, on my way to the store. But if I had to pass the cop man on my way to get my little Debbie and my little 25-cent bag of wise chips, then I was going to cop. I'm talking about being powerless over my addiction. I couldn't stop. You know, the first step also concerns itself with honesty. When I got here, I'm so grateful for this program, y'all. I'm so grateful for this program. But I always thought I had an honest nature. And even in addiction, you couldn't tell me I wasn't honest. You give me your money, I'll come back, and I might not come back with it all, but I'm not gonna keep rolling, right? In the beginning, I could come back with your money in the beginning. You know what I'm saying? And then I still thought I was who I was, even when I was smoking. I got a kind heart, I got your money, but after I done went and got what I'm supposed to get for you, and I got a couple dollars for me, and I'm taking mine off the top. Remember that? You gotta take yours off the top, right? So I'm taking mine off the top, and at the end of the night, I would smoke yours back with you. So I thought I was good, and I thought I was honest. You know, in this literature, it talks about our first honesty is being honest about our addiction. You know, I'm talking about at the end when I laid on that park bench, and I had to just come to the truth. You understand? You got a fucking problem. You can't make it home. You know, you're going to lift your babies with your mother for 4 or 5 days, you know. And that's where it began for me. This flat book also got a hit on honesty. Honesty. The practice of the principle of honesty from the first step starts with admitting the truth about our addiction and continues with the practice of honesty on a daily basis. I'm talking about practicing these principles in all your affairs. It was a young man that shared before me. He did a good job. But he was talking about this program is about prayer and action. It's about understanding and application. He talked about in the beginning thinking that step work was about a homework assignment. I knew. I ain't have it twisted when I got here. I knew that there had to be an internal change. You understand what I'm saying? I'm going to keep on going through this book. I just went to a 12-step workshop, right? We went through this whole book because this book came out in 98, right? in 98. And I picked it up and I started reading, and it was so in-depth, and it was just telling the truth, and shit was jumping off at the page. And I put it down. I said, ooh, that's too deep for me. I'm going to stay with the basic text, right? And then, you know, we don't become willing until we become beaten, right? After I got a little beat down, I was like, all right, they having a little 12-step workshop up there. I'm going up there, and I'm going to get in that book. And, you know, but, oh, here about the step piece. Here. It's time to do some step work, to engage in some concrete activity that will help us find more freedom from our addiction, whatever shape it is currently taking. Our hope is to internalize the principles of step one to deepen our surrender, to make the principles of acceptance, humility, willingness, honesty, and open-mindedness a fundamental part of who we are. So I knew that I had to do this stuff for real. It wasn't in the beginning, it wasn't about impressing y'all. My fucking ass was on fire. I was in a lot of pain. I had made a fucking wreck of my fucking life, and the disease of addiction was having its way with me, right? So I knew, because I remembered that good person, and I was trying to get back to her, because I had lied, cheated, stole, manipulated, you know, done everything I could to self-destruct. So I knew to get back to that good girl, the girl who had dreams and aspirations, the girl who set goals for herself, the girl who was liked by all the other little girls in the neighborhood, the girl who, you know, was loved and respected by. I was trying to get back to her at the end, right? So, like, I knew I had to come in here and do this stuff for real. So I started practicing these principles in all my affairs. You know what I mean? And just, you know, and I started, what started happening was I started feeling good about who I was becoming. I'm talking about losing that dishonesty and practicing. Because our literature talks about we are not going to unfailingly practice these principles. We're going to fall short sometimes. But most of the time, I'm talking about, I ain't no perfect recovering addict, but I'm living the fucking program. For real. And I ain't talking about it. I'm not trying to sound good in front of y'all, but I'm talking about when y'all ain't looking, I'm living this program. Mm-hmm. And it's funny because, you know, I had company over my house for the holidays, and somebody had dropped some money on my floor. I'm talking about first instinct, first thought, is to get it back to where it goes. For real. The first instinct ain't to put it in my fucking pocket no more. For real. I'm talking about the internal change. And that was like a revelation for me. It was only $40, right? But it was on the floor and it was in my house, and I had spent all the money for the holidays and niggas that came and ate up the food. And I used to justify, rationalize why I should steal your money or keep your money, right? But I found its rightful owner, right? When nobody wasn't looking, I did the right thing. You understand what I'm saying? And I returned the $40 to who it belonged to. And I'm talking about I felt good. So that's what it's about. You know, first step, talk about surrender. And it's always a new surrender. You know what I mean? I came in and I surrendered to the drug, but then you start, you know, taking a look at, without the drug, taking a look at yourself, behaviors. You know what I mean? I was very promiscuous all my life. I ain't know what that was. I thought he liked me and I like him. And when the euphoria wear off, I go to the next one. And then after the euphoria wear, I go to the next one. But that was causing me harm. So like I, you know, the first thing was the drug. The first step initially when we get here is about the drug. And then as we stay here, the steps start taking on a new meaning. And now I'm learning how to practice these principles in all my affairs. Right? So I surrendered to cigarette smoking. It was killing me. For real. Literally killing me. My chest would hurt. You know, and I'm talking about obsession and compulsion. The disease of addiction is obsession and compulsion. It lives in our thinking, and it will help us self-destruct, right? So I remember, like, being in places that say no smoking. I'll go in the bathroom and smoke. You know, when I get up in the morning and get dressed for work, I want a cigarette after my first couple of clothes. And I started seeing this shit is still on me. I put the drug down, but this behaviors and this obsession and compulsion is still with me. How come I can't stop? You know, I surrendered to cigarettes probably 10 years ago. It was an addict in the meeting that used to tease me. Are you still on drugs? You know how somebody stops something, then they done arrived somewhere, but shit, I thank God for y'all though. I thank God for y'all. Every little whisper y'all ever said about me, every little thing y'all, man, that's how we get better. If people around here talking about you, right, you need to look at your fucking behaviors and surrender one day at a time, right? That can help me get better though. All that whispering about me and shit, that shit, for real. That's when I know what I need to work on. When people are talking about you and the shit get back to you, that's what you need to work on. So, like, you know, I surrendered a whole bunch of stuff through this first step process. You know, I was talking to a young lady on the phone, and she's struggling with something else, and a lot of us know this young lady, and sometimes, you know, I ain't even got to break her anonymity or go into details. Y'all will know what I'm, but I ain't even trying to put her stuff out there, but she's struggling with a new addiction. She's been here a long time, and she's struggling with a new addiction. And at first, I just wanted to help her, because I remember when I got here, she helped me. She was the vision of hope. She was the evidence that the program worked. She had been here for a long time. She was living the program. So now I want to, she's struggling with something, though, with double digits, substantial clean time. And she's struggling big, though. You know what I'm saying? The disease of addiction, man, it will manifest itself as sneaky as insidious. You understand what I'm saying? The word insidious means sneaky, meaning it can't get you through the drug. You know not to pick that shit up. You know where that's taking you. But it will come in the back door and it'll get you on some other shit that you like. Mm-hmm. And it'll tell you to just take one. Mm-hmm. And then the next thing you know, you caught up in the grip.
Right.
So she's struggling with it, right? And I was on, you know, my father died recently and she called me up to offer her condolences. But I was more concerned about how she was doing with her struggle. So we had a conversation and I was like, won't you go to GA? Won't you go to GA? Won't you go to, and then a week went by and she was supposed to go to her first meeting and, I didn't talk to her, but I seen her here, and I embraced her. She embraced me. You know, make a long story short, after I thought about it, you ain't got to go nowhere else for you. Whatever you're struggling with, whatever your struggle is, whatever you know what your surrender, anything that is helping you self-destruct, making your life unmanageable, that's the shit you got to give it up. You got to give it up, right? And after I thought about it, I was like, why are you sending that girl to Gamblers Anonymous? You can do anything through a first step in the Narcotics Anonymous program. I stopped tricking. I stopped smoking cigarettes. Use caffeine. There's a whole bunch of shit you can stop in Narcotics Anonymous a day at a time. Still in time from work. I've surrendered a lot of stuff. But it's always a noose. Anything that I'm struggling with, gotta go. Anything that jeopardizes my personal recovery. Anything that ain't of God. Anything that ain't spiritual for this addict. And I'm not saying that I'm trying to be spiritually perfect, but I'm damn sure every day striving for spiritual progress. For real, one day at a time, right? They asked me to share on the first edition, too. Right? And you know what? I can sum it up. I'm trying to share the time, too. Y'all know I'm long-winded. Y'all got to flag me. Wait a minute. And I could share my experience on the first edition with my most recent stuff going on in my life, right? First edition talks about our common welfare should come first. Personal recovery depends on NA unity. I told y'all when I got here, I wasn't a hard-headed addict. Shit. They said jump. I said how fucking high. They said go get me some coffee. I went and got them some coffee. You understand what I'm saying? They said come early and stay late. I came early and stayed late. They said get a Narcotics Anonymous sponsor and user. I got a Narcotics Anonymous sponsor, not user. They said stay away from them people who get high. I stayed away from them people who got high. You know, so they said get involved in Narcotics Anonymous service, right, that it would keep you here. They said commit yourself to Narcotics Anonymous. I'm talking about in spite of yourself, and it would keep you here. They said jump into the weed of the program. I know I always wanted to be a part of something. I would see people be a part of college fraternities and see the little golden stars, or what's them ladies, some kind of, see people be a part of all the organizations, right? And I would see people be a part of all the organizations, and I always, where do I belong? Where's my group of people? What can I do? What can I belong to? Right? I came to Narcotics Anonymous and found a home.
That's right.
Look, and I came in here and immediately started doing what I was supposed to do. I think I was here maybe 6 months before I found my home group, right? And so, like, being a part of the unity wasn't hard for me. I'm plugged into this thing, y'all. Let me tell you. So I'm going to share this story, and then I'm going to shut it down. I got a call from Capital Health Systems in November. They said, Ms. McIntyre, we have your father here, and he's been here for a whole month. Now, I had been disconnected from my father. My father suffered from several illnesses. Schizophrenia is one of them, and the mental illness disease won't let you let people in. You're paranoid of people. You don't want them to know your damn SS number. You don't want them to know your date of birth. I do social work. That's what I do. I'm a social worker without a license. I ain't got nobody's degree yet, right? But that's my passion. My passion is helping people. Get a problem and come to me. I'm going to help you move into the solution. And that's just who I am. And I like doing that. I like how it feels after the fact. After you've helped somebody and they in a solution, you be like, yeah, I helped them, right? But we give God all the praise, right? So anyway, so they called me up. They said, Ms. McIntyre, we have your father here. He's been here since October. It's November. We need to release him. My father was in homeless status at the time. I told you he had the illness, right? He had sold his home, and he didn't have a plan B. You sell your house, you're supposed to move into another house. He had sold the house and found himself. But you know, the mental illness, man, I've been dealing with mental illness. Both my parents suffered from mental illness. So my whole childhood, we dealt with that. Crisis situations and emergency rooms and psychiatric hospitals and, you know, bizarre behavior. And, you know, that was my upbringing, right? So insanity was familiar to me, right? So wait a minute. So they call me up and they say, Miss McIntyre, your dad's here. We need to release him. I said, well, miss, you know what? I said, I love my father. I said, but we got two different lifestyles. My father like loose cigarettes and loose women. He smoked crack cocaine and he stay out to 4 o'clock in the morning. I said, I don't live like that. I said, I love my father. I said, here's my brother's number and here's his baby sister's number. I said, I hope you can call one of them and they can help. And I said, I'm gonna pray for my father. Right. And I sincerely, when I hung up with her, I was, you know, another book said you're supposed to honor your parents. You understand what I'm saying? So I was struggling with it. I'm talking about some spiritual warfare. Just in my internal, I was like, girl, you just told them your father can't come to your house. What's wrong with you? You got a house and you got a room about your dad can't come. I'm talking about something. I don't care who it is, though. When I'm standing on principle, I'm standing on principle. I got boundaries in my life. I don't let people in and do what the fuck they want to do in my life. You got to get my damn permission first. And my permission comes through the boundaries. I'm not talking about putting walls up, but I'm talking about setting boundaries. Teaching people how to treat you. It's not okay to come to my non-smoking house and smoke a fucking cigarette at my kitchen table. It's not. It's not okay to bring no beer into my house. It's not okay to knock on my fucking front door past 9 o'clock. Because my boundaries are 9 o'clock. My sponsors know they be laughing. Right? But if they in pain, I'll answer the phone. But don't call my house after 9 o'clock. Don't call my house before 9 o'clock and don't call my house after 9 o'clock. And that's my boundaries, because that's my me time, that's my rest time, that's to shut it down, shut the world the fuck out. We done made it through the day, we done made it through clean. Let's just shut it down now, go to sleep and get up tomorrow and do it again. So when the lady called me, I was like, miss, and I was struggling with it. After I hung up the phone and after I had made my decision, I was like, nope, it's my brother's turn. Nope, it's his baby sister's turn. Nobody. And God dealt with me. And my spirit and my conscience, he dealt with me, right? And what he said was, Kim, go get your father. He said, it's an assignment. I'm in touch with the assignments that God give us. And I'm learning how to just be obedient. Don't question them. Don't talk back. Don't talk back and just do what he tells you to do. So he said, Kim, you go get your father. My father came over to my house for Thanksgiving and he was good. Because my father's a bad boy. I've been getting stories. He's anybody who know my dad, he's a bad boy. He don't give a fuck about your rules or nothing. Will insult your ass, tell you off in your own damn house. Right? So he came over for Thanksgiving and he was on good behavior. And we had Thanksgiving dinner and he carved a turkey like, you know, like the fucking Brady Bunch or the damn Cosby's or some damn Leave It to Beaver shit. Right? And stuff, as a little girl, I always dreamt about having that back, right? So he came over Thanksgiving and he carved the turkey and shit. Then he left and he came back on Christmas and he put the tree up and he left and he came back on New Year's Eve and we brought in the New Year together. And he said to me and George, he said, I don't like where I'm living at. My brother didn't take him in his house. My brother took my dad and found him a room in a crack house. Nobody didn't want to be bothered, for real, for real. And that's a shame to say. You know what I mean? So my brother found him a room, but it was a room in a crack house. So my dad called me up. My dad said, I don't like where I'm staying at. I don't like the conditions. He said, come over there with me. Come see it. Right? So he was telling us some of the stuff that was. It was a crack house. So they do what they do in the crack house. In the crack house, you rent your room. You rent the room out twice. If you can get a hit off it, you rent the bitch out twice. You know what I mean? So they was renting his room out to other people, doing stuff in his bedroom. And he said, y'all go over there and see about it. Me and George got over there. We knocked on the door, and a young lady came to the door. Her face was over here. Her lips was over here. She was discombobulated, right? But for the grace of God, there go I. I'm talking about geek the fuck up at the front door, right? I'm a recovering addict, right? And I stay away from people, places, and things, but I ain't scared of the disease of addiction. I'm walking with a mighty God. I'm not saying I put myself in situations or nothing like that, but in my earlier recovery, I was scared. Now, like, I'm talking about after getting to a 12-step walk, you understand what I'm saying? Well, God take you back sometime. He do. So we went over there and we checked out the conditions and they wasn't good. So he came back to the spirit just said, this your father. I don't care how insane he is. I don't care how chaotic he is. I don't care how much he don't listen to your fucking rules. You fucking God said. I'm talking about he was the big voice. Like, take him home with you. I want you. We gonna work it out. We gonna get through. He was in my ear like on the bullhorn there. First it was a whisper, then it was the bullhorn. Take your dad home. Take care of him. So I said, all right, God. Me and George put my dad back in the car. We brought him home. My dad lived with me for a month. Total chaos and confusion in the household. But, you know, everybody else, you know, was taking, my family learned how to take group conscience. I practice these principles in all my affairs, and I take it home. I take it home to my family. So the kids knew, and they all knew how to call a group conscience meeting. And I'm in a relationship with a covering addict, and they called a group conscience meeting, right? And my ass got outvoted. But I was like, I know what God told me to do. One day, George and my dad got into it, and George had a shovel. Now, George is my recovering addict boyfriend and my sweetheart and my fiancé to be, right? George had a shovel and my dad had a kitchen knife, right? So George was going to shovel him to death and my dad was going to stab him to death. And I'm upstairs and I run downstairs because I hear some commotion. This ain't my house. My house got peace and serenity. This shit got to get the fuck out of my house, right? So I come downstairs and George is standing there and he says, Kim, your dad got to go or I'm going. I said, George, I'll see you later. Because I knew what God told me to do. He said, you nurse your father back to good health. You got skills, girl. I've empowered you with a lot of stuff. I want you to use that same stuff you use on them recovering addicts and them sick and suffering sponsees, and I want you to use it on your dad. Them same phone calls you make, them same solutions you move people in, you do that shit with your dad. So I told George, all right, if you got to go, go. But I'm riding this out because that's what God told me to do. So listen, my father left my house two Tuesdays ago. 2 o'clock in the morning to go get coffee. He got struck by a car and killed, right? That Tuesday before he died, I had took him to his primary doctor and got him his medications, and he was getting ready to get back in, you know, back in the mainstream of life. You know what I mean? And I'm going to wrap it up with the unity piece, right? First, when the phone calls started coming in, the support from the fellowship, the love of the fellowship, on any given day, it's the love of the fellowship that will get you through, right? I'm talking about every kind word, every encouraging word, every act of kindness I ever gave to anybody, it all came back to me. You understand what I'm saying? Phone calls was coming every day, all fucking day. They were sending sympathy cards with money in it. I came down, I started isolating because I didn't want to deal. Right? And that's sometimes how I don't want to the stuff I don't want to deal, I don't want to deal with it today. I don't want to deal with it right now. Let me act like it's not fucking happening. So I was acting like it wasn't fucking happening. And I was still doing what I needed to do. And I came downstairs. My home group members was calling me. I'm talking about Unity and Narcotics Anonymous. My home group members was calling me and I wasn't answering their calls. I was putting them in the saved messages, listening to the voicemails, and I was going to get back to them later. My home group knows me. It was a time during my personal recovery where I was suffering from depression, so I would go into isolation. They know me, right? I was upstairs using the bathroom. I came back down. My whole home group was standing in my fucking living room. They was coming to see about me. I'm talking about Unity and Narcotics Anonymous. You know what I mean? My father's service. My father, prior to his passing, had a lot of severed relationships. I told y'all he was, right? So he had a lot of severed relationships. The fellowship filled the damn funeral parlor up. When I got there, it was three strong men in this fellowship, and I won't call their names, right? But when I got out of the family car to go in there, I had to take care of the business, you know, the burial arrangements and all that kind of stuff, but I'm clean. So I can do that kind of stuff, right? Plus, I got skills. We got the little money together, right? And thank God I had some money in the bank where I could come out of pocket and help pay for my father's burial. But when I got there, it was three men in this fellowship, and I'm talking about strong men. You understand what I'm saying? Like, if my father ain't here, that would definitely be glad to father my ass, right? But when I got into the funeral parlor, they were standing there. And it was God saying, Boo-Boo, you gonna be all right. We gonna hold you up. You gonna walk through it. You understand what I'm saying? And I was so overwhelmed with the love in Narcotics Anonymous, and I continue to be overwhelmed. And ain't no place for me to go. I talk about buying a house and leaving here. I talk about going to get my degree. I ain't taking no more fucking NA commitments, and I'm going to just engross myself in my college degree. I'm working on for 7 years, I've been working on a two-year degree. I said, I'll get ready to get finished. You know, I got 42 credits. I got 15 more fucking credits to go. And when I finish this degree, I'll be in my third year at a four-year college. I'm ready to keep it fucking moving. I done set some goals for myself. I'm going to holler at Narcotics Anonymous. But God will do something, pull you back in. So I'm grateful to be a part of the Unity and Narcotics Anonymous. Y'all, thanks for letting me share. Yeah. Yeah.
or something. Let's give Kim one more hand. All right. All right. Our next speaker will do step two, introduction two, from the Small Wonder area, my man Omar.
I'm going to ask, my name is Omar. Good morning, everybody. Man, I'm supposed to read the yeah. That's okay. The speaker, the NA member chosen to speak at a meeting needs to be someone who is working and living the NA program of recovery, which is the 12 steps and 12 traditions. In areas where there is not an abundance of NA members with substantial clean time or experience with the 12 steps and 12 traditions, there is the possibility that a group inexperienced in Narcotics Anonymous may misunderstand NA traditions and invite speakers from outside the NA fellowship. There are several ways to avoid this situation. Our basic text, for instance, reminds us that NA members from other areas are willing to drive long distances to support new groups. The speaker helps fulfill the group's primary purpose, carrying the message of recovery to the addict who still suffers. When speaking at an NA meeting, we should be careful to deliver a clear message of recovery by identifying ourselves as addicts recovering from the disease of addiction. It is not necessary to dwell excessively on our active addiction or war stories, because we all know what it was like to use. We came to Narcotics Anonymous to stop using, and we are here to share our experience, strength, and hope of recovery. Once again, I'm still an addict, and my name is still Omar.
Hi, Omar.
First and foremost, I want to thank the Capital Area Program Committee for inviting me here. I haven't been in the Capital Area in years. I feel honor and privilege. Matter of fact, I may have been in Capital Area one or two or way back. So I'm privileged to be here. You know, I want to thank the program committee for inviting me. I want to also thank God. My voice is, I was at the Sixers game last night, and my voice is a little messed up, so just bear with me. But I want to thank God for giving me the opportunity to just get one more day. You know, regardless of however many days it's been, I want to thank God just for the day. You know, for the opportunity to not have to deal with the horrors of active addiction. And for that, I'm ever so grateful. My home group is the Delaware Step Group. We meet on Tuesday nights, 7:30 to 9, French Street in Wilmington, Delaware. If you're ever in the area, stop by. Our format is the steps. So I am very fortunate to try to the best of my ability to live through the steps. many are called and few are chosen. And of the few that are chosen, few of us still don't choose. Right? Let me say that one more time. Many are called, few are chosen. And of the few that are chosen, few of us still don't choose, right? And I am blessed to say that I choose, okay? I choose because I love our literature too. But you know what? Before I even get there, I want to thank you. Let me share this first. You know, when I first got here, the sister was sitting in here. I don't see her now, but when I first arrived, I also, you know, I'm one that I don't need an entourage. I mean, you know, it just seems, I just got in my car. You know, I'm not even sure if my sponsee took me to the game last night. I'm not even sure I even told him that I was, it's just not important, right? But somehow, some way, stuff get out. So I'm getting all these calls this morning. Are you going to church? Where you at? Damn, I'm on exit 5. Exit 5? You know, what time? So they're all rushing trying to get here. They do. Hey, if they do, they do. If they don't, they don't. You know? So I'm real grateful to be here. Time check. I'm real grateful to be here, and I want to thank Kim for setting that up, for bringing the spirit in this room. You know, and I hope I can just follow with a thorough step 2 and tradition 2. Right? But when I got here, because she's one of the first ones that I walked into when I came in. Right? And I've been visiting a meeting in this area for a little while now, so I know some faces here. And I realized that that was for now. To make me feel comfortable for now, right? So, you know, but one of the things, I want to, page 76, in the basic text, first paragraph, last line says, we have never seen a person who lives the Narcotics Anonymous program relapse, right? It don't say, it says we have never seen. It don't say 8 out of 10 times. It don't say the possibility. It says we have never seen a person who lives in Narcotics Anonymous program relapse. Now, how is that, Umar, what is that about living? It's through the steps. You know, it's through the steps. You know, I am so grateful for what God has done for me to allow me the opportunity just stay in position to finally become the whole man that I have always so desired. You know, for once in my life, stand on spiritual principles, right? And practice some integrity, you know, even in my worst situations, right? So can I pick up with after, thank you. Right? So, you know, I suffer from a disease. I ain't sure about nobody else. And obviously from listening to Kim, I know 2 people in here that suffer from the same disease. Right? Because I ain't heard all y'all's story yet, but I just heard her, so I know that she's, you know, where I am. But I suffer from a disease called addiction. Okay? And my sponsor family just uses this little analogy of that. And I'm going to share it with you. Because it's what you was talking about. Addiction. Check this out. A pathological or sick relationship with any mind-altering, mood-changing experience that has life-damaging consequences, right? I know that's a mouthful. I know that's a mouthful. Let me just one more time. And listen, think about it in your life, right? Think about it in your life. Because, you know, after a while, you come to find out it really wasn't about the drugs. So, addiction, a pathological, which means sick, relationship with any mind-altering or mood-changing experience, man. Experience that has life-damaging consequences. So as a result of that, I realized I need some help. I need some help. And Kim shared about the first step, the first tradition, you know, and going into the second, and talking about this process, you know, this lifelong, because once we leave one, you know, I don't know how you felt, but I'm telling you, man, I just felt so deflated. You know, I mean, I didn't know what to do after that. It had, now, let me just say this also, because one thing I realized and I understand that as a result of doing step 1, you may not fully understand step 1. Okay. Let me say that again. Listen, it's 12 of them, right? And just because I do one, I may not fully understand what one is really about until I continue on, because they all build on each other.
Yes, all
So my powerlessness and my unmanageability, just because I happened to have done that with my sponsor, I just didn't get it at that point. But I was more than willing to continue on to find out what this was about. So I moved on to two, right? And you know, one thing, literature talks about the fact of this process of coming to believe and passing over it with a minimum of concern, right? And I understand and realize that the minimum of concern that it talks about is this overwhelming, because what happens, because I'm one that believes that you get here fully intact, okay? I believe that God allows us to arrive on this earth fully intact with all the tools necessary of experiencing life situations the way he has set fit. But because of our human experience, we step away from the path that God has in store for us, right? And that's just Umar P-ology belief stuff, right? So the steps has allowed me the opportunity to step back towards the path that God has in store, okay? So listen, so check this out. So, you know, this process of coming to believe and this minimum of a concern that happens for us a lot of times happens in the life situations that I'm faced with, and all of a sudden realizing that, you know, because you'll get to a place and you'll believe that there's no way possibly you're going to get out of this one. You know, is anybody else ever faced with them situations where it just don't seem like, what am I going to do this time? You know, am I going to make it through this one clean? You know, am I not going to use, man? And all of a sudden, you find yourself on the other side, right? But we have a tendency sometimes to pass over that with a minimum of concern and not understanding that God has just helped us with some restoration process back to sanity, right? Right before our very eyes, stuff happens for us in here. You know, I mean, all kinds of stuff happens for us, right? So I only know one way to share. I only know one way. Where I'm at right here and now. I can't, you know, her story, because I was presented yesterday on my job. Check this out. I was presented yesterday on my job. I work in an oil refinery. Dangerous work, fight fires. Damn. I'll get to that in a minute. I was presented yesterday on my job by my supervisor with a letter from the CEO congratulating me on 25 years of service. Yes. 25 years of service at the same place. Now, let me tell the whole story. Because 20 years ago, they was gonna fire my ass, right? They didn't want nothing to do because I work in the oil. It's dangerous business, right? I was getting high out on the unit. No, wait a minute. Ladies, y'all may not feel me on this. I'm talking about striking a match out on the unit, right? Without taking it. Because listen, anytime you strike a match outside, you've got to take a gas test. You can't see it. You don't know what's in the air. There's stuff there that you can't see, smell, or taste. And I'm out on the unit striking the match. Right? And it's 25 years later. And I'm still there. Right? And the reason I'm talking about that, because you know what? This restoration and this process that occurred for me, you know, sometimes, man, you know, I just realized that I don't know sometimes how some of that stuff happened. I just don't know how it happened. But one thing I do know is that I just managed to stay clean. You know, I just managed to stay clean, and I just wanted something more, because my story is one that doesn't necessarily involve, like, I still had a job. I still had a car. You know, I was still with this woman. She's going to get rid of me. My job was going to get rid of me. I couldn't park the car in front of my house, but I still had it. You know what I'm saying, right? So it was rough for me when I got here. Because that materialistic stuff that we tend to sometimes put so much focus in had distorted my whole perception about why it was I was here. Okay? You know, anybody feel me? I mean, you know, I had a rough time, man. So talking about, because listen, it talks about in our literature about getting a clear understanding of what sanity is, insanity is, right? And at some point in time in doing this step, you know, my sponsor said to me years ago, man, years ago, he said, Umar, people don't do that stuff. What the fuck you mean people, excuse me, what do you mean people don't do that stuff? Of course we do. That's normal behavior. You know, he says, no, Umar, people don't do that stuff. That's not normal stuff for people, you know? And it blew my mind. Like, what do you mean? That's not the way we conduct ourselves? And he says, no, not at all. You know, so I had to sort through all that insane stuff to get some sort of idea of what sanity was for me. Right? And this process that occurred of coming to believe, you know, I just believe sometimes, you know, that I believe in a loving and caring God. You know, our second step talks about the fact of just, look, let me tell you what the literature says, right? The literature says, just act like you believe. The hell with it. Just act like you believe. Not being dishonest or manipulative. Right? Just do what we do. Okay? Until you can find the opportunity to believe in your own power greater than yourself. You know, so listen, let me get real forward because I need to get to the tradition too. So I celebrated 25 years service on my job, right? And I work in this oil refinery. I had worked swing shift for much of my recovery. Right? And not only swing shift, but backwards swing shift, midnight daisies, Miz daisies. So I've done that for many a year, right? And about 5 years ago, I was having some health issues, okay? And they didn't know what was wrong with me, but I'm in the process, right? Feel me on. I'm in the process of doing things right. So, you know, with some sanity and being and believing that a power greater than myself, I managed to, because a power greater than myself, listen, if you got medical conditions, a power greater than yourself, second step stuff, if you have medical conditions, go see a damn doctor. If you got financial issues, you might want to see a financial consultant. You got legal trouble, go get a lawyer. Right? Second step stuff. Okay? You know, listen, because, you know, this minimum of concern that will happen for us, we'll pass over this, you know, we'll pass over this and go and pray for a job and go back to bed. Now, wait a minute. Hold. I don't want y'all to, for a second, to not think that the God I serve can't give me a job in that manner. Because the God I serve is awesome. Right? There's a good chance that may happen for me. But listen. But my relationship with the God, see, God knows things don't work for me that way. Right? I need to grind. You know, I don't get it very well just praying for a job and going back to bed. I need to get up 7, 8 o'clock in the morning and hit the pavement. You know what I'm saying? You know, so this second step stuff and believing, you know, that this power can restore me, right? So this 5 years ago, I was having these health issues, and I was doing all these tests. I mean, doing all kinds, just tests. I was getting so sick of that shit. It was just, I mean, MRIs, EKGs. Stuff I can't even, I don't even know what it was today, right? Spinal tap. Now, I know some women here took me through a spinal tap. The spinal tap revealed that I suffer from multiple sclerosis, okay? I got multiple sclerosis, right? And so it was suggested to me 5 years ago that I try and get out of the job that I was in, okay? And I wasn't sure what that meant. That did it mean for me to quit? I got 20 years, at this time, 20 years seniority. What? I'm trying to get to pension status. I'm getting a little older, right? What are they talking about? Okay, I might need to change. So listen, because we serve, because there's a loving and caring God, a job opening came up for a day shift job, right? And we had just come from our my sponsorship family spiritual retreat off of the mountain here in New Jersey, as a matter of fact. And this job opening came up. I bid on the job. I got the job, right? But see, God, the process that occurs, because it's a lifelong process. Let me get that out there too, right? It's lifelong, right? And the process, but what happened as a result of going to that new job, my pay was cut. Okay, severely. And when I say pay was cut, what I mean by that is that, because I got to say this in the right context, what it meant was I no longer was available for a lot of overtime. I make $20,000, $25,000 in overtime a year. I used to make that, right? And so all of a sudden now I'm on this new salary, right? I just bought this new house, and I don't know how I'm going to make it, okay? But because I'm standing with some principles and just believing that God is going to carry me through and trusting and everything, I decide to just work hard at managing my budget, doing better with what God has revealed to me. Because I can no longer do that other job because I got health issues, right? So I got to go and do this job. I got to, ain't no more toys, ain't no more, because I'm an electronic geek. Right? I got all kinds of shit, Hell, I got my pocket PC with the basic text on it and shit. You know what I'm saying? Right? And so I'm doing all this new stuff and just trying to believe that God is going to restore me to some sanity and believing, trusting that everything's going to be okay. Okay? It's present day. Let me say this too. I need to get this out there because I got to say this every time I'm behind this podium. I have been with the same woman for 28 years.
Yes.
Right? We just celebrated our 19th wedding anniversary. Okay? Okay. I have 19 years clean. Okay, y'all follow me here? Right? And here's the last thing. I have 15 years of monogamy for the brothers. Right? Let me share that shit. Right? Did everybody get all that? Right? My daughter is 31. Right? A lot of numbers out there, I'm trying to take it slow, okay? I had two grandkids, 1-9 and 1-4. Yayro and Naeem. Okay? All right? Everybody got all that? Right? So I say that to say present day, right? After all this time, we have never been a one-income family. We have managed. And my wife is in recovery also, right? And all of a sudden, my wife's job is folding. This is last year, last June or July. My wife's job is folding, and she finds herself out of a job. But at the same time, she's having some health issues, So she has arthroscopic knee surgery last June, okay, to try to clean up the knee, right? In October, she had a hip replacement, okay, because they found out, well, as a result of the knee, it didn't go too good. Dig deep, more deep to detail, it's the hip, right? A full hip replacement in October, okay? Still experiencing a lot of pain, realized, oh, shoot, we need to go back and revisit the knee. 16 days ago, my wife had total knee replacement, right? And so for the first time in 20-something years because I worked through my addiction. We're down to one income, right? And I don't know how I'm going to make it. You know, let me get to the real, right? I got a nice house. I live in a beautiful home, right? And I shared this before up here in Jersey at the meeting, at the Flatbook meeting. And, you know, my basement is 3/4 finished, but there's an area there that's unfinished. And I want to turn my unfinished area, my basement, into a home theater room, right? You heard this, right? Into a home theater room, okay? Brothers, feel me on this. I know the ladies ain't going to get this, but I know you brothers are going to get this, right? The home theater system with the 92-inch screen.
That's a big house.
Huh? You feel me? 92-inch screen. Projector. You know, the chairs in there that when the movie and the plane, the chairs shake and all that shit, right? You know, right? But listen, we're down to one income, right? The money I had saved, okay? Because listen, I'm sucking step stuff here, right? The money I had saved all of a sudden, and I had saved a nice piece of money, man. I could do it in the way I want, everything. And you know what I got to do with the money? I got to pay the bills. I got to pay the bills. Because I've been with this woman for 28 years. Right? Because you heard me. 28 years and 15 years of monogamy that she put up with. Right? So, you know, I want to get to the second tradition right quick. You know, I just needed to share that because I needed to say that, you know, the process of coming to believe doesn't necessarily occur for you right at that moment. And you may not, it may not be a vivid, clear view of what's happening in your life, but we just got to stay.
Yes.
We just got to stay, man. You know, we got to stay because I guarantee you more will be revealed if you just manage to stick and stay. Right? I grew up autonomy, man. I'm a servant leader. I'm a servant leader. I got a new term.
Okay.
Trusted servant, but servant leadership. Right? Everybody, servant leadership. I'm a servant leader of the Small Wonder area. Right? And I say that in the manner that I understand and believe what has occurred for me and why it is that I'm here. Okay, I'm the new chairperson for the Small Wonder area after some 18, 19 years, right? I've done every service commitment in the area, but never really wanted to be the chair of the area. So I took on this chair position this last June, right? And it has been overwhelming, you know, but I understand it's my time. See, I had to go through all that stuff I needed to go through because I got some issues, man. I got issues. I got control issues and ego issues. And I have never, ever really gotten to any service commitment without personal self-centered gain. Right? I've always done service commitments for some sort of personal agenda in mind. Right? But listen, what has happened as a result of none of my agendas has ever panned out. So after you do that time and time again, you understand and realize, well, you know what, Umar, just do the damn commitment because whatever you have in mind ain't going to happen any damn way because you believe in a loving and caring God that has always has the best plan. Right? So I got into this area chair position, right, and it has been the most rewarding thing I have ever done in Narcotics Anonymous, right? The subcommittees are all straight. We come to area service. I got it. We come to area service. Area service is from 4:30 to 6:30, and you have to take a vote whether you continue on for another half an hour. We are out of there at 6 o'clock, right? You know, yeah, man, we get it done. All the subcommittee chairs are intact. Subcommittees are up and thriving, right? As a matter of fact, let me share this hope. All of us are talking about going on for a second term. Huh? Right? And that's only as a result, because group conscience is always the best policy. I use group conscience in my household also. Okay, as a result of the traditions and what it has done for me, not only do I use them in Sarah's service and Narcotics Anonymous, but I use them at home, right? And we practice group conscience. The little four-year-old is saying, let's take a vote, pop-pop.
Awesome, yes.
Let's take a vote, pop-pop. You know, so I managed to do that, you know, and I just believe that whenever you follow a group conscience, right, you can't go wrong. They can't come back on you and say, Umar, you know, that was self-serving. No, no, what do you mean, man? We did a group conscience. That was the vote. Don't come back on me with that. So I just believe in group consciousness, and I believe in trusted servant leadership, right? The only time I feel the need to really get in there is when it has gotten out of hand. It's my job to ensure that the meeting comes back to the issue at hand, that everybody respect everybody, right? Other than that, group conscious. You know, and that has only happened for me as a result of this process. You know, of this process, man. I got some other stuff going on and everything, but I'm out of time, and I'm just so grateful to be here. You know, let me share this. I'm gonna close with this. Kim had mentioned about the flat book, and there used to be a brother in this area named Kim. It's been so many years ago. And I came to this area. I'm gonna say like in 1990, I guess. And this comes from a piece of literature that was originally from the C list, and I don't know if anybody goes back this far here, but this used to be in a little stack of staple papers from the C list, and I can remember coming to this area and using this step study stuff and getting in big controversy in the Capitol area. Wanted to kick me the hell out of here, right? Because it had not been approved literature at that time, and this brother Kim from this area said, man, let me have some of that, and asked me for that literature, and he called me back a couple years after that and said, Umar, I can't begin to express to you as a result of that literature and what it has done for a lot of members in the Capitol area. And this is some, I'm going to say, at least 16, 17 years ago, right? So I'm glad to be back here, not being in controversy. And asked to leave. You know, listen, if I didn't share, I hope that I helped somebody, just one somebody, you know, and I am more than honored and privileged to be here. And lastly, if no one has told you that they love you today, let me be the first, because I owe my life to Narcotics Anonymous and you people. I owe my marriage. I owe my seniority on my job. I'm a better son. I'm a better grandfather as a result of Narcotics Anonymous and you people. And I don't take that lightly. Not at all. So thanks for letting me share.
Thank you.